Blog Talk Radio.
You are about to enter into the world of the paranormal with your hosts, Sherry Pang and Jason O'Fear. Explore with us the world of ghosts, UFOs, demons, and Bigfoot. You can also call into the show at 215-383-3999 and join the discussion. And we are back for another episode of Paranormal Horizons. I am one of your two hosts, Jason O'Fear, here with the beautiful Sherry Pang. We are back. How is it going, Sherry?
Hey, Jason. How are you?
Doing pretty good. Another week down the drain. How was yours? How was your week?
I love the way you say down the drain. My week has been very productive, slow, but, you know, it's been productive at the same time. And I'm very thankful to have, just to be alive. And, you know, it's one of the posts that one of my friends said, hey, what do you have to be grateful for? And today I have to be grateful for being alive and being healthy. And that's what I feel.
Well, that's a good thing to be grateful for. I'm grateful to be alive as well. I had a pretty uneventful week. I'm on a 3-day weekend because of the holiday, so I'm kind of excited to have that extra day off, which is pretty cool.
Great. You too.
Yeah. So you lined up another great guest for us this evening. Who do we got?
Well, I want to introduce, I want to welcome her back, well, Abby Black. Abby is a friend of mine. I have to say, one thing I want to say this. Abby is also, not only is she aroma, but she is a reader. She does soul retrievals and past lives and tarot cards. And I want to say as a compliment, as a psychic medium myself, I've had quite a few readers, but I want to say with her, I feel like I trust her. I feel that I trust her wholeheartedly with my soul and with my readings. And I just want to say that because that's how I feel. She's absolutely, I love her personality, and she's phenomenal. So she's going to talk about soul retrieval. Most people don't know what that is, but she's going to introduce that subject and kind of enlighten the people out there that don't even know what soul retrieval is. You're going to learn a little bit more about maybe who you are and what soul retrieval can help you. Okay, so we're going to bring her on. Abby.
Hello.
Hey, how's it going?
I am very good. How are you?
Good.
So we're going to...
You tell us about soul retrieval. What is soul retrieval? And just go ahead and we're just going to put you on the floor here.
Okay. I think the easiest way to give a description of soul retrieval is look at your soul as a puzzle. We all start out and it's this big, magnificent puzzle we can look at. We can see the pieces. You know, you see the big picture, you can identify where the little pieces are. What happens is, as we live and reincarnate, things happen. Traumatic events, negative experiences, and what it does is it creates a break or a fracture, and a piece of that comes out, and you end up losing a piece of the big picture, the puzzle itself. Well, what happens is, as you progress, spiritually and move to different lives and incarnations, that piece is missing. And so even though you're advancing, you're not advancing at a pace where you could, like at your fullest. And you always feel like something's missing. You don't fit in. You don't necessarily always feel understood. You just never feel complete. And what happens is if you find someone who is experienced, and that is crucial, and they go and they find these pieces and locate these pieces and put them back in, it's actually like a type of healing work. It helps you as a soul to kind of understand your lessons in life easier, to pick things up easier, because you're more complete, if that makes sense. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's, we're not even really aware when we lose the pieces. You know, it's really no different than like if something really traumatic happens in your physical life, you can mentally break. And, you know, you have to get medical treatment and things necessary to kind of bring that piece back in to make you complete and whole again. It's really no different. People tend to not look at the soul for some reason as nearly as important as the physical body. But a lot of what happens in the soul affects the physical and the mental and the emotional body. So if you can get your soul up to par and fixed as much as you can in balance, it definitely helps the physical so much more. It makes life, period, easier.
I have a question, Abby. Soul retrieval, is there any correlation or any comparison when you say soul retrieval? The first thing I was thinking, and this is just out there. What is soul retrieval compared to hypnotherapy?
There's a lot of difference. excuse me. With hypnotherapy, the actual individual, the sitter, as I like to call it, the person that's getting the work done on them, they're actually put in a state where they're hypnotized or they're doing, you know, going out more or less.
Okay.
Whereas with soul retrieval, it's more schematic because the individual that you come to for the help, in this instance, like a spiritual psychologist or psychiatrist, so to speak, they would be the ones that with you there, you know, you would relax, get comfortable. They would have to do the spiritual work because they actually have to be able to, based off of your energy, because we're all energies, find these missing pieces. And then they have to more or less feel them out wherever they are and bring them back to you and put them in place. So it's a little different in the aspect. In one, the sitter does a lot of the work. In the other, the actual person that's doing the retrieval does a lot of the work.
So
and
you
how many sessions do a person need? Does it vary or what?
It varies. Typically, when I do soul retrieval, I will have someone, we'll do initial consultation. And what that is I will tell the person, you know, what you're going to feel, what you're going to experience, when it happens, and I will get them comfortable, and then I will pretty much go into a meditative state, and I will go and just look at their energy. Look at the missing pieces. See the puzzle pieces that are no longer there. And I can see how many pieces are missing. Some people are really good at processing things. And, you know, in some instances you can over time as you evolve and work through issues, you can kind of attract some of these pieces back to you and they'll go into place on their own. Sometimes it's a lot more complicated, and that's where the outside part comes in. So, you know, some people, they may come for the initial visitation, and I look and see, and they only have two or three pieces that are out of place. Some people, if they've lived a really traumatic string of lives, and they've gone through some things, they're going to have more spots missing and broken that they're going to need work on. So, you know, you can't really say, okay, one visit, two visit, three visits. And if they tell you they can do it in one visit, run. Because if they haven't even looked in to see what's going on with you, how can they give you an actual assessment?
That's true.
Typically two is a good one. I mean, I think the most I have ever had was like eight. And this woman, she had definitely been through some things. And that was extremely, extremely rare. But it really depends on the individual. It really, really does. And how much the individual is also willing to work with the person. Because in any type of spiritual work, you can say, I'm ready, but you can still have hesitation. There's a difference in vocalizing it and actually be willing and accepting and ready to kind of be complete. Because it is scary. I mean, it really is, because you get used to functioning at this level with these pieces missing or under this degree of stress. And, you know, everybody fears change, even if it's subconsciously or even on a spiritual level. You may want it and welcome it, but you may still be blocking it nonstop. You know, I've had some people I've worked with, and they have completely removed themselves. I had one guy I was working with. It was amazing because he was so willing and welcome, he actually stepped to the side. And it was just cakewalk. I mean, hour and a half, he was done. He felt amazing. I felt wonderful because it was so much easier on me physically to not have to struggle and fight to do it, you know. But, yeah, it totally depends on the individual and the experiences they've gone through. And, you know, not everybody can do soul retrieval. And I think if you are seriously considering it and you have someone who says, oh, I can do this, ask for references. And it's not a negative thing. People, for some reason, when it comes to spiritual matters and, you know, things within the spiritual and metaphysical community, they're paranoid to ask for references. No, do that. You need to, because you need to know who you're working with. You need to know that they are experienced and that they're not going to mess you up more than they're going to help you. You need to know that they're dependable. You need to know that they don't, because a lot of people, sadly, and it happens a lot with readers, they'll quote you one price and then want more money at the end of the read. Mm-mm. No, you need to have it all laid out beforehand.
Wow.
Can somebody learn to retrieve their own soul? Like, are there certain things that somebody can do? Exercises?
There is some things you can do. A lot of it is more or less coming to terms with things that you're uncomfortable with, to put it honestly. Because, I mean, say, for example, you have this unrealistic fear of drowning. You don't know where it comes from. You know, you don't understand why. Well, it's very possible that in a past life you drowned. A lot of people say, oh, well, that's where my fear and phobias come from when it comes to past life, and, you know, things like that. But they don't understand the reason is because your soul's not complete, because at that point it fractured.
Oh, wow.
You have to go back to that point of when you drowned, and you need to kind of work through it and bring it up so that you can emotionally deal with it, and that fear and phobia will go away. The soul retrieval will be intact. It'll click back into place, and you'll be able to move on, and the fear will go away.
So, like me, Abby, I have a fear of height, and I have a fear of water. Do you feel that, again, you just told me it that part is fragmented and something has nothing to do with a past life. Is that so, or can be?
It can be.
Okay.
See, with soul retrieval, it's not just necessarily this life. Your soul is eternal. I mean, so that's the way, also why it's shamanic work, because you have to find someone that can not only deal with the current and the now, but the past. You have to have someone who can access your complete history, so to speak, like your record books, so that they can go in and say, ah, well, this is what happened, and this is when it happened, and that they can fix that. And so, you know, it is possible that that is where your fears come from. Entirely possible.
Wow. What about you, Jason? What do you think of this?
It's interesting. So does everybody, I mean, basically if you're alive, everybody's soul is, I guess, fractionated to some degree. I assume some worse than others. Would that be an accurate statement?
That would be a pretty accurate statement. I don't think I've ever seen anyone who was completely whole. I mean, and we get so used to operating. It's no different than, say, if you have an ailment, and it's a chronic ailment, you get used to operating at that level of pain or illness, and you just function. So, I mean, we're unaware of. And so we just bump around.
So if somebody wanted to try and determine, you know, how much soul retrieval they need or how much repair needs to be done? Are there physical symptoms? I know that you were talking about phobias and stuff like that. Are there other things that somebody could look for to where they would say, oh, hey, I definitely need to see somebody about this and try and get, you know, put back together, so to speak?
Mm-hmm. Yes, if you're hung in cycles, like you're repeating the same scenarios and situations in your life, and you keep changing things and you can't progress from that, you know, if you're actually sabotaging yourself, you may need to look into soul retrieval and find out why this circumstance or this situation or type of life event has got you, you know, so that you can't process. And, you know, it's like I was saying with the puzzle reference earlier, you can't get the big picture and evolve and figure out your circumstances and situation now if you're missing a piece. So that's the thing. And also a lot of people that have massive issues with soul retrieval that need a lot of work, they always feel like they don't fit in. They feel completely unattached to self, to community, to environment, to time. It's almost like they have issues bonding. It creates a lot of issues. And a lot of people confuse it for phobias or mental diseases and illnesses. And it's not. It's just the mind, the spirit controls so much, like I said earlier, of the physical, the mental, and emotional body, that when it is not intact and taken care of, it affects those things. And the soul, it does stain us. You know, events that happen can stain us and cause fears and phobias, and you got to work on them. You got to focus on the big picture, not the current now only, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I answered your question.
It's interesting. I mean, I kind of feel that I probably certainly have some little bits of pieces of myself that could probably be put back together. But I suppose, like you're saying, that's everybody. Everybody has some need to be put back together. But no, I mean, I find it fascinating. Are there experiences where someone came in and said, you know, or you determined that somebody was really needed some therapy or whatever, and once you did it, they had some sort of success story where things improved?
Oh, yeah. I had one woman, you know, for the life of her, she was terrified. She hit like 30. She was terrified to be in cars. She would not get in a car. She would not drive a car. She would not get in a vehicle, period. We couldn't, nobody in medical society could figure out the whys. It was just an illogical fear, a phobia. And she came to me, and it was really a last resort. She was like, Abby, I need to know what's going on because it's tearing my family apart. It's tearing me apart. I can't work. I can't do things with my children. And so I sat down and I did the basic evaluation, and we found out that she had passed away in an automobile accident when she was like pregnant and she was 30 in a previous life. Well, it was so traumatic because she and her mindset then wasn't ready to cross that she fractured, she broke. And so once we were aware of what it was and we went in and we retrieved the piece and put it in place, she no longer had a phobia. It was almost instantaneous. She's out driving around. It's just getting it back together. It's almost like an instantaneous flip of the switch or clicking on a light switch, you know. It just, it fits instantly. It's not like regular therapy where there's so much time that has to, you know, go through and therapy and sessions and all. It doesn't work that way. And, you know, the thing is, too, when you do soul retrieval, you do have to deal with the emotional aspect of it. There's a reason that piece fractured. And so when it is put back in place, I tell my people for 2 or 3 days, take it easy and process the emotions, because it's going to make emotions surface that you weren't even aware were there. And so I tell them, you know, drink a lot of water because you keep hydrated. It helps your energy flow through your body. You can process things a lot easier. You know, I tell them just take it easy, and whatever emotions you have surface, let them come out, because that is the emotions that pertain to the instant or the piece of soul that was retrieved. And so you have to let them go.
Can you have an event that happens while you're alive that kind of breaks away pieces off that you would need because
most definitely it can happen at any point. It can happen in previous incarnations. It can happen, you know, in this incarnation. It can happen at any point. And it just, it's finding them and putting them back in place.
And is that something, so when somebody comes to you and obviously mm-hmm. has some issues, is it kind of like a psychic skill where you're sensing the pieces that have broken off? I don't know the best way to put that, but, you know.
I understand what you're trying to say.
Yeah.
Yes.
Is that you
yes,
sense it?
It is. Because you sense and you feel. With me, I get imagery. And I can feel people's emotions also because I'm empathic. And so when I'm working with an individual and I go in and I don't look at the physical, I look at the actual soul. I go to the records and I see things that have happened. I see when the similarities sync up, when things fall into place. You know, if energetically they have a hole in the spot and then, you know, their records indicate that they had a traumatic incident in this spot, you know, you can kind of see where you need to deal with and what you need to work with. And so, yeah, it's definitely something that the average Joe can do. You know, there is plenty of people out there that can do it, you know, that are shamans and, you know, they've been doing it in Tibet for thousands of years. The way I do it falls more or less under a form of Tibetan shamanism. And so indigenous cultures have did it for a long time. You know, the older cultures, the indigenous peoples, the ancient societies, when a person was ill, they didn't look at the physical first. They looked straight to spirit. And they would fix the spirit, and the body would follow suit. And that's more or less what this is about, fixing the spirit so that the body and the life can follow suit.
What do you think about that, Sherry?
I think it's amazing. I believe wholeheartedly in the whole shamanic process of soul retrieval. I love it. I mean, it's something that we all need to be aware of, and if you are looking about getting whole, that is something that you want to maybe pursue as an option.
I've been thinking a lot about, like, meditation and stuff like that because I definitely, you know, like everybody else has their own issues and, you know, if it was, I don't want to say easy, but going to somebody and trying that out, it might be a good investment, and, you know, why not?
Most definitely.
So,
yes, you should meditate also. Meditation is phenomenal.
Well, the problem with me is discipline. You know, I might try it for a few days and then I just get bored with it.
Mm.
That's pretty much me with anything. You know, you try it and you work on it. And but, you know, I could use a lot of calmness. I have a lot of anxieties and stuff like that. And I don't know that I really have a lot of phobias. I'm not a fan of flying or heights or anything, but nothing that really kind of freaks me out. Nothing like that. I've heard stories about I don't remember what bridge it is. There's a bridge somewhere where there's actually people that will drive people across in their own car. They pay like $50, and people like make a lot of money driving these people across this bridge in their own cars because there's people absolutely terrified of driving over bridges. Who would have thunk it?
There's a lot of things out there people are scared of.
So, yeah, it's all very interesting. Let's see. I have another question here. So, now, a lot of this is based on, you said it can happen currently. A lot of it's based on past lives, fears. So basically, if somebody, like you gave an example earlier, was burned in a house fire, that would generate a fear in this life. And I've read stories where sometimes even the scars carry over into this life.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know a lot about reincarnation or anything like that, but I also find reincarnation interesting. It would be nice to believe that we are can reincarnate, and it's there's not just nothingness after death. I'd like to believe that. What about you, Sherry? Do you believe? I don't remember. I'm sure we've talked about it before. Sherry, do you believe in reincarnation?
Absolutely. I used to not. I grew up in a family that was very spiritual. And, yes, definitely believe in reincarnation after what I've seen in my experiences, definitely.
And you just said that you were afraid of, was it water?
Water and heights.
I didn't know that. So you don't go, like, you won't go in a swimming pool or swim in the ocean or river or anything?
No, I can't swim.
Oh, so you avoid it outright?
Outright.
See, I'm the opposite. I love to swim. If there's a river, I'll jump in it. So that's obviously a piece that doesn't need to be placed.
I can't swim, number one. And number two, when it comes to heights, even after the first two rungs, I have a problem with climbing, looking down. So I've had it ever since I was a little child, very much so. So.
What about flying on a plane? Is that bother you?
I have no problem.
Wow.
The only thing I have a fear is like crossing over logs or crossing over, climbing on ladders or roof. Forget it. No, thank you. How about you, Jason? Do you have any fears?
Not really. I get kind of panicky on airplanes, but I had a job where I was on an airplane every week, and I just hated it. So I've flown a lot more than most. But it's interesting. I'd be curious to know why I could be flying all the time, and then suddenly it's a panic experience. Do you have any input on that?
Well, that happens. It's like I was saying with the woman earlier, that had passed away in the car accident, you know, in a previous life at 30. It hit her at 30. When she turned 30, that's when hers came to surface, because that was the similarity in this life and the one before when the incident happened. So, you know, it doesn't necessarily have to be flying for you. You could have been in a situation, which I don't know unless I look. This is all, you know, possibilities, where, you know, it could have been, you lived in a mountainous area, you could have fell off a cliff. It's just being in the sky, hitting, falling, you know, feelings that you would associate now with an airplane. So it's not always the obvious. it could be something that happened in your past.
Well, it's interesting because I have a rather frequent dreams of being in plane crashes. And, you know, most of them are kind of irrational dreams, but I've had a few that were pretty dang real. And I remember it was a passenger plane, it was a jet, and it crashed, and I remember the flames coming to me, like, and I remember extreme pain, and that's it. So maybe something from a past life has kind of leached itself over into this current life and developed those anxieties.
Or maybe it's just a dream.
I don't know.
I like to tell people, here's the thing, when it comes to dreams, you can typically tell the difference between a dream and when it's something that is spiritual based, whether it's a visitation, you know, someone that's passed coming to you in a dreamlike state, or, you know, something pertaining to precognition or fears. It typically is so much more emotional, and it totally feels different than a dream. When you compare the two, it's totally opposite. I mean, because a dream, you may have some emotion, but it's almost like you're a watcher. You're vacant in what's going on. Whereas when it's something past life related, spiritual, things like that, it tends to be so real and vivid that if you didn't know you were asleep, you would actually think it was an event that was going on in life. That kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
There's a huge in the field.
And since I'm talking about dreams, I have a really common dream for me, and it's trying to get away from erupting volcanoes. And I've always wondered, I mean, could there be anything like prophetic about it? Like, it's really weird. It's a very repetitive dream of being close to a, you know, a mountain basically blows up and I'm trying to get away. And I've always wondered if, you know, maybe that's kind of some sort of psychic thing about some sort of geological apocalypse that's going to happen. And because of those dreams, I don't like being near volcanoes just based on those dreams.
That one, I think, feels more past life related than the actual precognition aspect of it. It just feels it. Yeah, you probably should dig on that one. People aren't aware of how much your past actually affects your living now. They're just not. People take things, and we get messages you wouldn't believe all the time. It's just like I've heard so many kids say when they were little, oh, I remember being this person or that person. And so often people write it off and, you know, don't look at it as if it's a valid thing. But when you're young, society hasn't gotten you yet and said, oh, no, you're crazy for thinking that or you're crazy for feeling that. You haven't had it programmed out of you. And so it's right there beneath the surface because you're young, too. You just crossed over. So it's still vivid in your mind. And people write these experiences off, you know, like your repetitive dreams and, you know, fears associated with dreams. That's, to me, not all of it, but a lot of it is spiritual, and it's issues you need to resolve or things that, you know, is right below the surface waiting on you to remember it, because I think we all want to. I think that's just part of our nature. We want to remember and understand who we are as a soul and on a soul level. But we, like I said a while ago, get it programmed out of us. And when you start scratching beneath that surface and really exploring, so much makes more sense. And you kind of initially, you're going to get mad because when you start figuring you out and figuring out the soul, and you realize how much you've been ripped off and how long you've gone without answers and, you know, been told that you were crazy for these fears and these feelings and these ideas and thoughts and emotions, you get angry because then you start thinking, well, why did they do that and why is not everybody out there pursuing this awakening so that we can all evolve and become better people? Because that's ultimately what any spiritual work is about. It's the evolution of the soul. And it's a beautiful process, but I'm going to be honest, a lot of spiritual people won't tell you. It can be messy. It can be ugly. And it can, remembering is not always wonderful. Because when you do remember, like I said earlier, you know, I tell my clients, take a couple days once we do the actual recovery, to let things sink in, because you're going to have to work through these things. You're going to have to grow from it. And I love my work.
So there's
just
soul.
Surrendering yourself and being able to just look at yourself and see where you're, you know, it's like peeling the onion. How much deep are you going to go wanting to unpeel that onion and look at yourself in a very raw form without any ego, without anything, and trying to be as unbiased about the whole situation and where you came from, who you are, and which way you're going.
Exactly.
That's where I think it is. It's just it's the work. It's willing, you know, like Abby, you know, what she does, what I do. Yes, we can help facilitate the healing, but if the other person is not willing to facilitate their healing, and is not open to doing their half of the work or their part, their biggest part, it's not hard. It's not conducive. It's almost, I'm not saying it's a waste of time, but you want to look at it in a perspective of how much are you willing to help the person if they're not willing to do their share of their work and looking at themselves in a not
not in a, sometimes in a very pretty way. And there's a lot of tears, a lot of anger. There's a lot of, you know, a lot of emotions that are involved. But if you're really wanting to open that up and look at it, that's really, it's the most beautiful thing is to, is part of the healing process, is uncovering those things.
Exactly.
I love it. It's great. I mean, even as painful as it is, I am so glad I'm going through that process because I'm growing and I'm learning. And as I facilitate my readings, it's all about sharing. It's about sharing and loving each other. And that's the bottom line.
Well, another thing, too, is anytime you evolve as a soul, the whole entire planet evolves to a degree because we are all linked together ultimately.
We are. We're all one.
And so, you know, anything you do to progress yourself mentally, emotionally, physically, spiritually, it creates a ripple, just like throwing a pebble in a pond. And as it goes out, the wave gets bigger and bigger. And so, you know, it's not just necessarily about helping you when you do these things spiritually, like soul recovery, reincarnation, regression, things. The people around you start seeing noticing differences and changes because you have changes of behavior. You have changes in attitude that affects them in a positive way. And they begin to see you in a new light because you are growing. You are advancing. And so, I mean, its benefits are limitless in my mind, really. I mean, for the little bit of maybe emotional crap you have to process, it's beyond worth it. It is beyond worth it.
It's priceless. She said it right. It's priceless. Absolutely. 100% agree.
I heard somewhere, and I don't remember where, somebody said that we all possess, like, the same 99.9% of DNA. I don't know if that's true or not. I assume it is, but I have no idea. So we all are related, if that's the case.
Pretty much, yeah. We all trace back to mitochondrial Eve. So we are all related at some level.
Not too bad. Everybody can't treat themselves as family. Everybody.
Well, that's another thing. As you evolve spiritually, you know, I've had many people come to me for regressions, for work, and I've dealt with over the years, because I've been involved in spiritual work for 26 years. In that time frame, I've had numerous people come in. I've dealt with everyone from white supremacists that were black in past lives. That's a wake-up call. I mean, when you learn about yourself and you reevaluate yourself and you remember, how is it possible to hate someone when you have been that exact same person? When you remember that and you remember the tension and, excuse me, the hell you endured as this individual, it helps eradicate the hate, because from that point on, when you remember, it doesn't make it possible, because then it becomes an issue of almost self-hate because you've been in their shoes. And so, you know, it helps to eliminate a lot of the hostilities and the angers in the world. I think that a lot of the issues the world has is spiritual. And, you know, there's a difference in religion and spirituality. People assume the two go together. They do not. And, you know, if we could all kind of work on ourselves and get to a deeper understanding of not just now, but all of it, it would eliminate so many things, seriously. I have worked with my past lives and regressions for years upon years. First one I remembered, I was in third grade, and it was ancient Egypt. I was in there, and I was writing out pages from the Book of the Dead in my art class, completely unknown what I was doing. But, I mean, I remember being black. I remember being white. I remember being a Jewish man in Auschwitz. I remember these things, and there's no way I can't have compassion for people that are different from me this go-round when I've been all those things, and I remember those things.
What about
because
the person
they're
that
all
says,
me also.
What about the person that says, oh, it's just your imagination, you're just picking up stuff subconsciously from the television show you watched? How does somebody know that, you know,
I understand a lot of that, and what I think people need to do is, if you're going to deal with regression of any sort, like I said before, find someone who has credentials, that is willing to give you references, and record the session. Any time that you go to someone and they're facilitating a regression, and they, for instance, like when I do regressions, I never do anything but walk them back to a point and they tell me where to stop. I don't give them a time. I don't give them a date. They give it to me. When I have the time or I have the time frame, I will ask them, what do you see? Who are you? I never mention a place. I never mention any of that to them because there is a lot of doubt when it comes to reincarnation work, things like this. Because if you look at a lot of regression videos, people either A, don't know what they're doing, or B, the facilitators do leave it open so that people could have doubt as to where these things are coming from. If you're lucky, and I've had this happen numerous occasions, someone has said, okay, I was this individual in this place at this time. Luckily now, it's much easier than it used to be back before the internet was massive, and Ancestry.com existed. Didn't mean to throw the name out there, but sorry. But you can go and you can actually look for these individuals. It's getting easier. You know, realistically, if you're somebody from a small town in Oklahoma that's never left Oklahoma, and you say, okay, I remember being George Jones, for instance, in Washington, and I died in 1859 in this town, and he's not a famous individual, you know, how would you have this information? Or how would you have access to it? You know, luckily now you can find yourself if it's not too far back. The credibility is coming, you know. University of Virginia has had studies going on for a while now when it comes to reincarnation, where they actually are finding children. Because in a lot of cultures where reincarnation is openly accepted, like suppose like the Druze of Lebanon, these people come to this life and have complete recognition of who and what they were before. And so, you know, the folks at University of Virginia started doing research on these kids in these populations where reincarnation is accepted. And they would take the child's information and say, okay, well, who were you before and what town and all this? And these kids were right on. I mean, and I think the major difference is Eastern societies and Western societies view it totally differently. If we accepted it and embraced it the way that they do with an open mind and an open heart, I think things would be a lot differently because you've got these kids over there that are remembering every single aspect that can go back and see family members that are still living and, you know, sit and have conversations about events that they had had an experience previously with the individual as a different person. You know, I really believe that a lot of it is conditioning and how we're raised. When we come here, we're all on a basic level ground. I mean, naturally, some people can hear and feel and see a little more than others because they're tuned in more. But it's conditioned and indoctrined right out of us. We're told it's wrong. We're told we shouldn't feel that way. We're told we're crazy. And, you know, we all begin to believe it. We create doubts, and these doubts build walls. And it just blocks it off more and more and more from us understanding it and understanding self. You know, these societies that have taught about reincarnation for generations, you know, they've been doing soul retrievals and, you know, healing, removing ropes and threads and things for thousands of years. These things predate Christianity, and it's just who they are as a people. It's so different than here. Here, you know, in the States, they don't do that, and it's messing us up so bad. I mean, I hate to put it that way, but it really is. We need a spiritual evolution. We need an awakening, and it's going to start independently with each and every one of us, putting aside the fear and the insecurities and stepping up and pushing our boundaries and attempting to remember and discover self and soul.
it definitely seems like, you know, we're kind of deconditioned as we grow up. And I think we lose touch with being human and compassion and all that, and being able to see the other side or see other dimensions. I've always wondered if people, some people that suffer from mental illness are actually kind of seeing some other, I don't know, some other reality. Maybe that's just me being weird. I don't know. Like maybe the veil has been lifted.
In reference to what I was saying a second ago, you just made another point to it without even being aware of it. Do you know that in most indigenous cultures and in most countries outside of the United States and Europe, that when someone, when they were young, especially back in time, came and they noticed that they started having what we would consider psychotic breaks now, or they were saying they were seeing things and hearing things that other people weren't seeing, they didn't say, oh, they're crazy, and lock them in a facility. These people said, oh, you're gifted. And they would put them in with the shamans and the elders and the leaders that really were the spiritual workers, the strong people with amazing understanding and spirituality. And these people would spend their entire childhood and young adult life growing up in that. And they were considered the shamans, the mystics. They were regarded in high regard because they seen beyond the physical now. And that's something that we've done also now. We've eliminated that. You know, if you go into the jungles in the Amazon or whatever, they still have people that are, if they're considered mentally ill in our society, they would say, oh, well, you're one that walks between two worlds. They would pat you on the back and they would hide you and, you know, hold you in regard. We're backwards. We really have lost a lot of who and what we are spiritually. And it saddens me because we're getting, like you just said, we have less and less compassion and understanding for people. We're growing further and further apart. You know, we have less and less understanding of anyone differently than ourselves, and it's sad. It really is.
I highly agree with her.
And then doctors just want to throw drugs at the slightest sign of any kind of mental problems. Oh, you're feeling depressed? Oh, here, take this. You know, have anxiety?
The money-making scheme they got running, why are they going to tell you that they can fix it with a little spiritual work, you know?
I always hate taking pills. I avoid it like the plague. Even if I'm in pain, I don't take pills. I don't like stuff that messes, particularly things that, you know, mess with the mind, like those SSRIs, mm-hmm. like Prozac and stuff. That's kind of scary.
Mm-hmm. You just, if you want to work through that, work on spirit, seriously. You know, a lot of people, and something I've noticed also is used to empathy and being an empath was something that was rare. You know, used to it was a skill I ran across, felt like I would somebody, you know, that was psychic, medicine, you know, that had gifts in other areas. Now it has gotten to the point where, for me personally, that's the easiest gift I can see on someone. You know, I can talk to somebody for 2 seconds and know, okay, they're empathic. There's this whole new wave of these people coming out that have skills and abilities like empathy. And I think the reason is because it's going to be up to us to save this world. It's not going to happen with science. It's going to have to come from heart. And it's going to take us getting tired of people being treated unfairly because of race, religion, sexuality, or any of this, and really get back to the basics of love and understanding. And I think that all these empaths are being born and all these people with skills and abilities. Here's the issue. These kids do not have trainers. They do not have understanding. And a lot of these kids are coming up in families where I was lucky. My family has had skills and abilities and talent for, we know, 8 or 9 generations. So when I was a child and I said, I seen this or I heard this, well, explain what you saw. Now we have these children coming up that have no parents, that have, well, they have parents, but the parents don't have any understanding of these gifts. And these children are lost. You know, there's so many people out there that are spiritually gifted. And we need to mentor these new children. We need to mentor these people in our society instead of acting like, you know, I see so many people in my area of work, metaphysics, spirituality, things like this, that act as if these skills and talents we have, we're supposed to hoard them away. Like we're not supposed to help or teach the other people. That is not right. That's the total opposite of what we're supposed to do. Because as we teach these new children, they're going to lead us to a new future. They're going to take us to a place of higher understanding we've never reached. And that's our job. That's ultimately what our job is here, to open up people, to develop consciousness, to get people to a level of spiritual awareness so that they can take it to the next level. And then when the next generation comes, they'll be the teachers, and they'll be better off than we were. We can't sit on what we know and the things that we can do and make it unattainable for people. We have to be able to get out there, and it's not easy, and say, okay, this does exist, this is who we are, and this is what can happen if you're willing to work for it. You know, I can do so much. I can go in, I can unlock you. I can give you understandings of your gifts. I can do soul retrieval. I can do regressions on you. But what are you going to do with that knowledge? What are you going to do to make yourself a stronger individual? And who are you going to help down the road so that spiritually we all evolve to a higher point? And that's really what we need to do.
It's sharing. There you go, girl. Yes, definitely.
Well, I know that there...
in it away.
The empath thing is really popular. In fact, just last night I just met a random person who told me they were an empath. You hear a lot about it, a lot more, and I assume that's just because people are just becoming more open to that, or the message is getting out there more. A decade ago, I never heard of people talking about being empaths, but it seems like it's right around every corner now.
Hey, I got a question for you. Not to intervene, but I got a quick question. When you say empathic, you know, is empathic you know, Abby, what's your feeling about the word empathic? Just like I'm gluten intolerant. That was what came through my mind. Is like I'm gluten intolerant, and then another person, I'm empathic. Is that a new buzzword?
It really is. I mean, to be honest, there, like I said a second ago, there are many, many more people gifted and skilled popping up now than I've ever seen. However, not everybody and their brother and their Uncle Jed is empathic. You know, it has become a buzz thing. And, you know, now that all these shows are out about ghosts and paranormal and witchcraft and all this, so many people have gotten these wrong notions in their mind as to what these things are. Because the people that are really legitimate empaths, witches, you know, people that deal with ghosts, they're not out there correcting people and putting themselves out there and fixing the situation. They're not educating people on what it really is. So these people are out there looking like idiots bumping around in the dark. And I mean, I hate to put it that way, but it's the truth.
So a bunch of...
It's reality compared to fantasy.
Yeah, I mean... You know, and it's like everybody's like, oh, I wish I could be like you. No, you don't. You know, it sounds beautiful.
It's a big responsibility.
Yeah, it really is, because when you're a spiritual individual, it's not something you can cut off. It is something that is every day. It is not just a lifestyle. It is your life. And, you know, there's points when I go in public and I'm in a grocery store and I'm told by spirit, you have to read this person, or you need to do energy work on this person. And, you know, it's not easy for me because I'm not a kind of person that likes to be out in the limelight. I don't want to be on stages and in movies and shows. I much prefer to be in the shadows. It's hard to walk up to someone and say, okay, spirit said you have this going on in your life. I need to help you. And I do this often to the point my kids are like, oh, Mom, it's embarrassing. Stop. But you can't. Because it's your work. And so once you pick it up, you can't walk away from it.
Yeah, I understand that. Definitely. When you're told to do something, that's when you're, yeah, most definitely I can relate to that. Very much so, Abby.
I know I don't.
The other part of the responsibility, it's not so glamorous.
Oh, it's not, and I've seen many things I didn't want to see.
And you have to be careful, just because, you know, you can see or feel or hear these different things, it's not all bright and shiny. Oh, yes, I see so-and-so, or you need to do this, or, you know, can I suggest something? There's always a risk, because you always have to be on guard, because
I don't even watch television at my house, because if I cut the news on,
oh,
and there's a missing child, well, if that child is deceased and was victimized or raped, guess what? I get to see that. It's not all peachy keen. I don't get lottery numbers, people. I get the stuff I got to fix. And usually what you have to work on and fix in the world isn't the pretty things.
Well, it looks like I'm looking at the clock here. I just glanced up, and we are just about out of time. So got to wrap this up. Now, how can, if somebody wants to learn more about it or get some of that, I don't know if the proper word is treatment, or how would they contact you?
I have a Facebook page. That's the easiest way you can contact me. It's under Reads by Abby Black. You can contact me on there. Also, I have an email if you want to set up appointments for consultations. It's Abby Black, all lowercase, @outlook.com, and I check those daily. So, yeah, I'm pretty good about getting back to people.
Awesome. Well, Abby, I want to thank you so much for coming on and teaching us a little bit about soul retrieval. I'd never heard that before, so it's great to always learn new things on the show. So thank you for taking the time to sharing with us tonight.
It's glad to be here.
Thank you, Abby. We appreciate you.
Appreciate you,
yes,
too.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Hey. Yes, I don't think we ever had soul retrieval on the menu since Paranormal Horizons ever started, so I just thought that would be really interesting for our listeners and viewers to perhaps get a little bit more taste of what it is, and hopefully maybe explore that option of therapy. So,
well, it never occurred to me that, you know, as we live life or in a past life where we could have kind of fractured ourselves and you know, in, with respects to the past lives, maybe, you know, some of that stuff bleeds over and causes these irrational fears and other issues. So,
oh, most definitely.
Something I never heard about. I had read the stories about, you know, scars carrying over from past lives, but, you know, from more of a spiritual aspect, it never really occurred to me that there could be some spiritual fractions or whatever that need to be pulled back together to make somebody spiritually complete again. So it's very, very interesting. Yeah. So,
yeah.
What do we got coming up next Sunday, Sherry?
Well, I'm not sure. I've got a couple people on a wrap. Eric Mitchell wants to come back and talk, and he actually wants to talk about remote viewing. He's a remote viewer, and he's also a friend of Ed Dane. So we've got some big people coming back, and I've got Stan Gordon on the hook line, and Barry Gaunt. He's going to talk about some other stuff. So, you know, we've got Coast to Coast regular viewers that are coming back on our show, and I'm just excited. So, yeah, it's a good smorgasbord of different subjects for our listeners and viewers to learn from and to explore. So I'm pretty excited, Jason.
Yeah, remote viewing. I'm trying to think back, and I don't, off the top of my head, ever remember that we've talked about remote viewing. And
think
that's
so, just like full retrieval. I don't think that's never been covered. So yeah, I'm pretty excited.
It's very interesting, you know, and there may be something to remote viewing because the CIA spent a lot of money being involved with that, and there are were some pretty prolific remote viewers that were used by the government. And basically, what that is, you know, they go into this altered state and they project themselves to where they can see. You know, like if the government wanted to check out a missile site somewhere else in the world, these remote viewers could go there and view it remotely in their mind.
Hey, yeah, they can fine tune into you, Jason.
Yeah, you could go be like a remote viewing stalker, spying on people. And I guess there were some really good ones that were able to get stuff that were verified. Basically, they would give somebody a coordinate somewhere in the world, and the remote viewer would visit that place remotely in his mind and would draw down what he saw on a piece of paper. And there were people that got it right. So,
Definitely. And I pulled a shout out for Ed Dames, and I'm waiting for him to come out too. So, yes, he's the master. He's CIA, used to be government, and teaches about remote viewing for government agencies and that kind of thing. And it's just amazing. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to it, and put a shout out to George Norrie himself. So I'm just waiting back on that too. So, yeah, I'm excited.
Awesome. All right. Well,
just really enjoy each and everybody that we have on our show. Just really, it just amazes me how wonderful. I learn a lot. It's good to be able to talk to them and good people.
Absolutely. All right. Well, we'll wrap it up. And unless you have anything else, Sherry.
No. And, yes, thank you to each and every one of you for your listening and support. And if you have anything that you want us to cover, just throw us a shout on Facebook or Messenger, and on Facebook Messenger under Paranormal Horizons. So we will definitely, or at least I will definitely get back to you and try our best to open up some more horizons for them. So I'm looking forward to it. Okay.
Awesome. Well, I hope everybody has a great week. And if you haven't visited our Facebook page, it's Paranormal Horizons on Facebook. And we will be back next Sunday, 8 p.m. West Coast time, for another episode. So hope everybody has a great week.
Right. Everybody have a good week. Peace.
Good night, everyone.
Good night. Bye-bye.